Last week, I gave you the background of the Chodesh HaLevavos. That is a 11th century Rishon, and this was, he belonged to the school of Musar. And he was one of the great ones that belonged to that school, and his great work is Chodesh HaLevavos, The Duties of the Heart. And I explained to you how he says that for every part of the body, there are mitzvahs that have to be done. And also, as far as the heart is concerned, there are mitzvahs which belong to the heart. And that is the feeling of man. And his work is divided into 10 parts. And the second part, the Shara Bechino, deals with the question of the observation of the whole of creation, observing creation, and examining creation. And he regards that as a duty. Now that is what I explained to you last time. This is regarded as an obligation that we observe the world round about us and we examine the world round about us. And that is the first paragraph in chapter 3 of part 3, which we are doing now. Yes, Jordana.
I'm sorry, I have a very elementary question. I had thought that Rabbi Charles Galanta was the father of the Muslim movement.
No, you've got to be very careful of that.
Okay.
He was the Musa movement, he's part of Torah. You find Musa in the Torah itself.
So the Musa movement started with creation?
Now, you know, I'm speaking on this subject in Los Angeles on July 14th, 15th, and 16th. And I'll explain it there, but I'll just give you the outline of it. It's wrong to speak of the Muslim movement. That is exactly what Yisroel Galanta did not want. He didn't want a movement. He didn't want a president and a secretary and election and all the politics that go with it. He was most opposed to that. He didn't want any movement. All he wanted was that in yeshivas, a half hour every day is devoted to Musar, and that every balabos, you know what a balabos is?
Yes.
Every Jewish person, every layman, spends half an hour on Musar. And when he lectured once in Kovna, and a balabos said to him, what happens if a person's only got half an hour a day to spare? Should he devote that half hour to Musar? Or to learning Gemara, and without a doubt, he said Musa. So this man said, but surely Gemara is more important than Musa. So he said, don't worry about that. If you learn Musa for half an hour a day, you will find that you will have more time for learning.
Mm-hmm.
So you learn Musa for the half hour a day. That is all he wanted. He didn't want a movement. He was completely opposed to a movement of Musa. You follow? But Musar is in the Torah itself, there is Musar. But the whole of Yeshayahu is Musar. Yirmiyahu is all Musar. Part of Deborim is pure Musar. Moshe speaks to the people, explains to the people, Hazinu Hashemayim by the way. That's all Musar. So we find it, and last week I explained that there were at least 10 different areas of Torah that I view with during the time that you come to me, sooner or later you will come across each one of these 10 areas of Torah with which I deal. Musa is one of the 10 areas of Torah. It's as old as the Torah itself is. The only difference is when one goes. As years go by, we don't get the full impact of Musa from the Torah and from the Mishnah and from the Gemara. In the Mishnah, there's a tremendous amount of Musar. Pirkei Avot is Musar. But it's the same thing as in our home in Johannesburg, when we sat on the veranda, we had the most a striking view across. We could see there, I used to look at the many colorings of green that there used to be, and the different colorings, and then the tiles on the roofs of some of the houses, they were red tiles. It was the most beautiful sight. Anyway, one day I saw an artist that painted a picture of that. The picture that this artist had painted was even more striking than the reality of it was as I knew it. Saw the picture. Of course, I know that very well. Next time I sat on the ground and I looked out, it meant even more to me. What did she do? She took out this particular part and highlighted it. It was there and she didn't have anything else. So I saw only this. Seeing it on its own, it was highlighted. After that, it meant much more to me. I saw it highlighted, I saw it as part of the whole, and so forth. And that is what happens with the school of Musa, as it did with other matters also. What the authorities did, and this goes back over 1,000 years, it goes back to the period of the Gaonim. It goes back to about the year 900. When they started, they saw the necessity for highlighting Musa. It was necessary. Otherwise, it wouldn't mean as much to the people anymore. It would pass them by. As happens, we read the Torah every week. During the time that we read the Torah, we read the Musa passages. How many are impressed by it and think of it and are stirred by it? How many? If we took it to heart, we would break down and we would weep when we heard it all. But it reddened it. And so what is done, it became a special study. But it is was never meant to be a complete study on its own. It was meant to be part of the different departments or areas of Torah. And so we've got all these different areas of Torah. We've got halacha, we've got psak, we've got analysis, we've got homiletics, and these we've got musar. These are all different departments of Torah. At least 10 of them, that sooner or later we deal with it here. You follow, Jordana? So that is it. So he wasn't the founder of the Musa movement. He didn't want a Musa movement. There was no movement. Unfortunately today, people are looking for things to do. So they make a Musa movement and it's a movement now. That is happening all the time.
Is it interesting that this title that he is the father of the
Muslim
movement, is that
interesting? Yes. Just turn it to 9. Now don't use that phone for it.
It does,
but yes, by the time you get to it and you find 9 and you realize it starts from 1 and goes to 0 and it doesn't start from 0 and go to 1, it goes to, then you've, by that time you've lost it already. All right, so just it must be done from the other side, not from this side. Now, do you follow? So that is, it was a difference. Unfortunately, people today are making a movement of it. They are ruining it. And then it starts. That person is suitable to be a chairman. Then it's finished. That's exactly what Musa is not about.
Right, because I think it was Rabbi Strauss who wanted it. Was opposed to the idea of learning Musa for half an hour. And she strictly Muslim said it should be learned all day.
No, never. No?
No.
Only half an hour. Well, he might have said to one individual, you should learn more. That he might have said to an individual. Did your dad say just the opposite? That's what it's all about. You said, well, did you learn this all day?
No, I think what I learned is, as opposed to saying Musar is separate from Torah, and let's just learn just about half an hour of Musar, but you're saying, well, it should be entwined with everything, and it shouldn't be separated well, and then divorced from the rest of the family.
He didn't say it. The Briska said that.
That's right.
The Briska said that.
Reb Chaim said that.
But Reb Chaim, he could afford to say it. You see, he could afford to say it. But if it's only a person like Reb Chaim who could afford to say it, well, we can't afford anything like that. And his great Talmid, Reb Baruch Be'er, insisted on exactly the same thing. But Reb Baruch Be'er himself, after he became the greatest protagonist of Musa, he saw that it wouldn't work otherwise. So it had to be taken out, and that's what the Mesilas Yesharim did. Everything that the Mesilas Yesharim did is in the Torah, but he took it out and highlighted it. But today they are ruining it. Everybody is writing books on Musa all of a sudden. And a lot of nonsense is written. It's such utter nonsense. It's altogether wrong. And it's written. Yes, some very good stuff that he's written in English. Excellent stuff. Yes?
What do you think about Christian's book?
He's very good. Yeah, you can't go wrong with him. He's good. Yes, isn't it?
Rob, could you give an example of a section of London? I'm sorry, you said that it was also at the time of Moshe.
Yes.
When he was teaching the Israel.
Yes, well, I'll just give you any number of places, but we'll just take a few.
It's in the Torah, then, within the Torah.
In the Torah, yes, there are parts of the Torah which are pure Musa. For example, when he says, if you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, then I will give you rain in their season, and the land shall yield the produce. And the trees of the field shall yield their fruit, and your threshing shall reach into the vintage, and you will dwell in your land safely, and I will give peace in the land. That is Musa. Then he goes on to say, and if you will not hearken to me, then I will reject, and you will reject my statutes, and if you have all my ordinances, so that you will not do all my commandments, but break my covenant, I also will do this to you. I will appoint terror over you. I will set my face against you. That's all Musa.
So then the study of Musa is studying these passages and deciphering them?
No. Well, what happened afterwards was that you had great authorities that wrote on Musa.
Wrote on these
passages? Yes, they composed and compiled works on Musa. This is the foundation of it is here. But they went and they compiled books on Musa. I'll give you an example of it. May I follow you? Just a few. I'll just read to you one passage. In the Torah it says, you shall not take revenge nor bear a grudge. Now that is halacha. That is a law in the Torah. Now, here he comes, and now comes the Muslim part. So he starts. The difference between taking revenge and bearing a grudge is that the first indicates a person's withholding good from one who kept some good from him or injured him in some way. Clear?
Yes.
Whereas the second, bearing a grudge, denotes a person's interlarding, a worthy act towards one who had wronged him with some reminder of that wrong. So, the person who takes revenge says, well, he did that to me, I'll do this to him, and he doesn't. That's taking revenge, which is not permitted. A grudge is somebody needs him, he says, right, I'm doing this. In spite of what you did to me, I'm doing this, I'm helping you. That is bearing a grudge. He's not taking revenge, he's helping you. But he hasn't forgotten the wrong that the other person did you. That is commentary. On halacha. That is commentary on halacha.
And that's
that is, no, that's still not Musa. That is commentary. That's all it is. Exposition and commentary, which you remember we discussed last week. Then comes, now, he says, the evil inclination advances and inflames the heart and constantly seeks to leave at least some trace or memory of the wrong. So the gate, a person does me wrong, and I'm working hard to forget it, and I don't want to remember it, and I don't want to bear him any grudge. The Yetzer Hara is working on me all the time. But, you know, he did do you wrong. You know, you're still suffering from the harm he did you. But I'm not interested. It's gone, it's forgotten. How do you know that he's still not harming you? Why should he? We are your friends already. That's on the surface of the reason. And he doesn't let go. Now this is Muslim. So what the Mithilas Yishorim is doing is warning you of that. That now we come to Muslim. He says, if it is not successful in leaving a strong reminder, it will attempt to leave a weaker one. That's the Yetzer Hara. For example, it will tell a person, if you wish to give this man what he did not want to give you when you were in need, at least do not give it to him graciously. Say, what it is. Don't give it to him graciously. All the Yetzer Hara, you see. Or if you do not want to hurt him, at least do not do him a great favor or offer him a valuable assistance. Don't help him. Or if you want to go so far as to be of great help to him, at least do not provide him this help in his presence. Give it to him. Get away. You see, or if you have forgiven him, do not remove your acquaintance with him and become his friend. Do not renew your acquaintance with him and become his friend. It is enough that you do not show yourself his enemy. But to be, okay, you don't need to be his friend now. That's all the Yetzer Hara. Now, what Musa does is, it brings this to you. And if you learn it properly, then it enters the area of your feelings. And it's not only your mind, and you're moved by it. And now you want to reach those standards. And if you want to go so far as to be friendly, but he do not show him as much friendship as of yours. They get at least five. Now you're already nice to him, he's already your friend, you already visit one another, but make it a little bit less than it was before. Oh, that is the way the Yetzer Hara works. Now, is this reality or isn't it reality? You don't think so? I think it's so real. And it's so human.
Oh, it's human. Oh, yeah.
Of course. This is human. This is real. This is exactly what happens.
Right.
And he describes the whole struggle that can go on. Now he goes on. All such suggestions are among the intrigues of the evil inclination by which it intends to ensnare a person's heart. To counteract this, the Torah states a general all-embracing principle and love your friends as yourself. Now he's doing how to cure yourself of it. That is Musa, making you aware of what you are doing and what is happening to you. That you are really a miserable creature. Just look at you. Become aware of it. Do you want to remain a lump of misery? Or do you want to improve yourself? Let us now begin. You want to improve yourself. Says in the Torah, and you shall love your friend as yourself. As yourself. You know what that means? With no difference whatsoever. As yourself. Without distinction. Without devices and schemes. Literally as yourself. So now you've got to go. Then he goes on. As far as Israel, then he goes on to other things. But there you've got an example of Israel. Now that is study. And in his introduction, I've always told you that the introduction and the first chapter of Mithilas Yishorim, that is a work in itself. And in his deductions he says, easier for me to find it in the Hebrew. Yes, I'll look at it. is the Ayalpiz. It follows then that the benefit to be obtained from this work is not derived from a single reading. So it is possible that the reader will find that he has learned little after having read it that he did not know before. We know all this before. Its benefit is to be derived rather through review and persistent study, by which one is reminded of those things which by nature he is told to forget, and through which he is forced to take to heart the duty that he intends to overlook. So he says that going over and over it again, and each time I go over it, I always find something that I didn't notice before. But the whole idea is going over it again, being aware of it, learn it half an hour a day. Now, you can learn it without having any intentions of putting it into practice. So you've got to learn Musar in order to learn Musar, if you understand my grief. As with so many things, sometimes you've got to prepare yourself for something, and sometimes you've got to prepare yourself to prepare yourself, that the preparation itself also needs preparation. So that is really the case with Musar. Now, I hope I've given you some idea of what it is all about. Have you got it, Linda? And that is just an example.
Well,
yes?
I have a question about loving your friend as yourself. Is it, I had a friend once that I felt that I practically loved more than I love myself.
Yes.
I'm wondering if that's perhaps going overboard in the other direction.
Well, you see, the Rambam asks that question. You've got to understand, first of all, the first principle is seichel. Seichel is plain common sense. But it's got to be real. It's intelligence. It's more than common sense. It is intelligence. If I love your husband as I love myself, does that mean to say that when my wife and I go on holiday, I've got to take him and his wife on holiday too? Because that's what I do to myself. But before we go on holiday, we're going to buy new clothes. I buy new shoes for myself. My wife buys a new bird. I see that she gets it. So I've got to go to your husband, see that he takes. Tell him to go to C&R, get yourself a new suit. And your wife, let her go to Grumps and order the new Grumps.
No,
you'll buy Grumps and get a new suit because I love my neighbor as myself. But your husband is not the only neighbor that I've got. You follow? Jordana's husband is also my neighbor. Gemma's is also. Sophia's is also. Hannah Kellerman's is also. I go right down the table. I look nice, won't I? So that is nonsense. That's not intelligence. So it doesn't mean that. So the Rambam defines what it means. It means that anything that I would have, and you see, then there are degrees. I mean, I'm very fond of your husband, but I hardly know he hasn't given me the opportunity. I'm very fond of your dad's husband. He has given me opportunity. I see him twice a day, sometimes more often, comes to lots of shiuri, asks me questions, discusses things with me. So it's not quite yet on the same level, is it? You're not insulted with what I say to you, are you?
You're saying it's permitted to have degrees of friendship.
That's right. So I must make a distinction between degrees of friendship also. Not all, you know, everybody's friend is nobody's friend. That you've got to know. So there are degrees in friendship. How do you manage it? Now the Rambam discusses it. He discusses it in his great work. Discusses it here. And he says like this. What I would have expected, if I am in a certain situation, what I would have expected that person to do for me in that situation, then, if he is in that situation, I must do the same for him. Got the idea, Mary? You follow?
Yeah.
Now, I wouldn't expect your husband to do as much for me if I'm in a certain situation as Johannes does as husband. We're not as close. We have known each other for so long. You follow? So, then I do less for your husband than I do for your other husband. I don't have to even think of taking him on holiday and his wife. I don't have to think of it. You follow? Would he ever do it for me? I mean, we're not on that level.
That is the criteria.
That is the yardstick. That which I would expect him to do for me, that I must do for him. That is the well, now it makes sense. And not all people are the same. One I'd expect more from one than I would expect from another. From my brother I would expect more than from another. There's a leap. If he needs me, then I must do exactly the same for him. That is the idea of it. Yes.
But then there's Peshit, and Peshit has a very different requirement.
Chesed is altogether another thing. Charity is another thing. Charity is, I do charity not because I must love my neighbor as I must love my neighbor and myself. I must do charity because that person is in need, irrespective of who he is. It's possible I don't know the person at all. It's possible I've never seen him, I'll never see him again or something. That's irrespective of anything like that. Chesed is helping another one that is in need. But that is irrespective of anything else. You see, the difficulty comes in when you've got two people and you've got to help them. Then, of course, the one who's closer to you deserves your help first. I must help my brother before I must help my cousin. I must help my cousin before I must help a stranger. So that is in that all goes into Tutadoka and into Chesed. But that is a different mixture. After they are talking about it, you love your next man as yourself. Yes?
Well, going back to the other question,
yes.
Am I allowed to question?
Yes. Actually, you're not three, so you...
Oh,
but
you.
Don't waste it.
You've got it. It's quite important because a lot of us have studied secularly.
Yes.
And the question of loving oneself, what does the Torah actually say about one loving, it refers to loving your neighbor. What does it say about self-love?
That is a very important question. Yes.
I'm also serious.
That is a very important question. And there are extremes to that. One extreme is not loving yourself, and another extreme is over-loving yourself. And there is a famous place in the Talmud, the Narcissus idea, the famous case in the Talmud where Rabbi Shimon, he was a Kohen, and a certain man came to him, and Rabbi Shimon didn't like Nazarites because he felt that they undertook more than they were able to undertake. 30 days, if something can go wrong in the 30 days, after 25 days he can do something, and it starts all over again. So he's got to be a sacrifice, and he's got to do it over all another 30 days. So if he manages to get through the next 30 days, it's 55 days. All right, it's not so bad denying oneself certain things for 30 days. But then it comes for 55 days, and don't forget your 50 days, because part is dead scared, it can work out for another 30 days.
Right.
He felt it was too much. But once, he says, a man came to him who was a nozzle, and that was, he felt, that was just, he felt it was just too wonderful. And what was it? This man came to him, and he was a very beautiful young man. So beautiful that he divested his attention. And he was a nausea, and the nausea let his hair grow, and he had the most beautiful locks. And he said to him, you've taken to be a nausea, those locks will have to be shaven off. Why did you become a nausea? He said, what happened was, I was looking after the sheep, my father's sheep, and I came to a brook, absolutely clear water, and I bent down and I saw my image reflected in the water, and I saw all this beauty. I knew exactly what trouble I was in. My next move, instead of going to a shears, would be to go up there. 2 days, I became a Muslim. To curb me to death. That's why I did it. So there is what is too much self-love. You follow? So self-love, and Musa speaks about it. What is self-love? which is what you can't have self-love unless you know what is man's purpose in life, which we've been doing in the Derech Hashem, and is in the first chapter of the Kodesh Torah. He speaks about it. What is man's purpose in life? How long does a person live? 70 years, 80 years, 90 years, 100 years, lost. And then it then begins eternity. That is, then he lives, the soul lives for all eternity. If he loves himself, then he must prepare himself for eternity. Part of life is what he knows. He's in love with himself. The truth is, we don't love ourselves. We love ourselves wrongly. That's not loving oneself. Loving oneself is knowing what am I really responding to that. Now that is the best for me. That is really what is best for me. Follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The man who eats cucumbers, he loves cucumbers. But it makes him ill. His doctor says, don't eat cucumbers. I enjoy it. The man who smokes, the doctor says, it's going to kill you. He can't give it up. Does he love himself or not? He loves himself so much that he can't give it up. He wants to smoke. He loves himself. He enjoys it. Does he really love himself? He doesn't love himself. If he would love himself, he wouldn't smoke. So, it's really, you follow what happens.
Yeah.
You love yourself, yes, but you've got to know what it means to love yourself. That is the problem. Got the idea?
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got one more question. Don't ask it now. You're going to use it all right.
Yeah. It has to do with the problem I'm trying to grasp. So, introspection basically is the primary purpose of going through
Mutter. That's right. Introspection. As Linda says, getting to understand yourself, to know yourself, who you really are, what is in your, that you get from.
So, in other words, loving your neighbor as thyself, if you don't understand yourself, you can't possibly love
yourself. That's quite right. You've got to understand yourself.
Or love them more than yourself.
You've got to understand yourself. And understanding yourself, you can only understand yourself if you know what it's all about. And you can only know what it's all about if you study the Torah. So there are a lot of things that are intertwined. Got the idea?
No, I
don't. Right. Right. That wasn't the first question. That's all part of the second question.
Thank you.
So you've got one more question. Any other further questions? Yes, Eddie.
On the
Yisra Chabad,
not allowing you to really stop wearing the gloves.
Yes.
Nonetheless, can't just be tempered by intelligence, but seeing someone's character, seeing if they're lacking certain traits that can make them a real friend, even though one can't forgive them, one now feels forewarned that perhaps they, you know, have a fault here or there, and that you really can't reestablish a friendship at the same level.
Yes, now that is permissible. That you've got to be very careful that your decision and your assessment of that person and your judgment of that person is not based on something personal. That you've got to be good. That we call negio. Negio is self-interest. Right? Like a man I met. Right. And another thing I must tell you, Abby, we all get hurt in the course of our life. But two things you've got to know. It doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that I mustn't get hurt. Get hurt, that is life. But another thing I must tell you about. It's all taken into consideration by a chair. So it goes down on the credit side. Right? You've suffered already. So that's been paid off now. So it all goes off. So that helps one to carry it through. Right? All right. Yes?
Could you repeat what you said with Nagio?
Nagio is self-interest.
No, you were... I'm just trying to clarify what you said. Did you say that it's okay to have that self-interest and to say...
No, I said you've got to be careful that your opinion of another person isn't colored by self-interest. It can be a professional jealousy. So I've got opinion of him, I'm jealous of him. But I won't admit that to myself. That's all self-interest. I don't admit it to myself. I find something wrong with him. That, and really, what I find wrong with him, it's wrong in myself also. The better I don't see self-interest. Happened to me the other night, I was walking home from school, and I passed a gentleman, and he's got a most beautiful dog. And I look at the dog, and I say, that is a lovely dog you've got. He says, yes, thank you. I say, how old is he? He says, it's a she, she's 2 years old. I said, is she intelligent? He looked at me and said, ask her. I said, there's no point in asking her. She's an interested party. She will say yes. That is the deal. That is the interest.
What if, like I was going back to her question, what if it's the kind of friendship that drags you down, or if you feel that it's dragging you away
then,
from
then you've got to stop it immediately. That is a bad friend. And we have always been very careful when our children were growing up. We were very, very careful of that. And I remember the conversations that my wife used to have with me. What is going to happen to our daughter? The sons we will be able to control. But then it starts with the parties. And that she'll want to go to parties. What is going to happen? We never once had that problem. Not once. She was asked to party. She didn't even come to ask her, should she go? Just said, no, thank you. I won't be able to come. Never once had that problem. Very careful of the things. And once our son wanted to go, and my wife and I, we had discussions. He wanted to know, can he go or can't he go? And we had discussions to let him go. We don't want him to go. We don't want him to be with those people. Not to let him go. When we were in Johannesburg, we were all alone. We were laying the foundation. So, and he used to come to us and say, may I go? Have you come to a decision yet? Not yet. Eventually we came to a decision, we came into the study, and we spoke to him. And we said, we have decided we don't want you to go. Not a word. So we asked him afterwards. He said, no, I know where I stand. I'm satisfied, I know. He just wanted to know, he wanted to have that assurance that he was that he wouldn't go there, he wouldn't worry him at all. But he was always, and it paid off wonderfully well. Paid off wonderfully well. We're very careful of the friends they had.
Hey, and was that on the basis of friendships you'd already had with those people, or on their reputation?
Well, you see, we were in a difficult position. We had a very, very large congregation, and eventually that relationship spread when I was on the Berthe, and I had to do with the whole city. And so there were people, they were very nice people, and these people were close to us. And those were the people that we said, yes, it's children, their children, it's right. And those people were closer to us. They would come to our home. They were a much closer group. They were the Cape Sushi Urim. They were a different group. Of course, our children mixed with their children. That was all right. And they knew that they couldn't eat in their homes, or they had to be careful. And on Shabbos, there was no going out. They knew all these things. But of course, there you've got to be careful. You've got to choose your friends by all means. Some you are closer with and some you are further with. And there are some people you've got to keep at arm's length. There's no question about it. You know what that means. To keep at arm's length. Oh, yes.
Just
watch me occasionally and you'll see how I do it. Yes. Oh, you keep people at arm's length. It's quite all right.
So I was getting the impression from what you were saying to Abby that it wasn't okay to revise your opinion of a person as you got to know them better.
No, it is. But you must be able to revise it the other way also. Both ways. What I said to Abby was, you've got to be careful that when you assess a person and you don't like the person, that the reason is an objective reason, and it is not a subjective one, it is not that person is better than I am. I don't like it. That person's slimmer than I am. Then guide you. Look how slim he is. And I don't like that person. Too slim. Those things you've got to be careful about, you see. There's some very, very bad things that are done. And it's done in the name of religion and done in the name of Zumkat, and it's nonsense. There's a certain man in Israel who did something. It wasn't right. He said something. When this pointed out to him, he withdrew it immediately. He did chew the, he had written it. He said, anybody who brings my books to me, I'll pay them whatever they pay for it. I'll give them back the money. Well, they just ran into the ground. And that is a terrible thing to have done. Now, what do you think they did it? To save the Torah? That was their idea. Have you ever been to England? Once. Did you ever see a hunt there? Did you ever hear of a hunt?
Well, I
you know,
see,
you know what it is. Yes. You know what a hunt is. Yes, they run the poor animal to the ground. They don't let go. Give the animal a chance. Don't let go. And the hunter that goes to Tanganyika, what do they call the place now? Kenya, all these places. The hunter that goes, he goes into a tree and takes his rifle and he shoots the poor animal. The joy gets out of it. These people, that is their hunt. It's a terrible thing. That's not Musa. That's what they get. This hatred, which is, it's all part of the hunting instinct, that we are very opposed to. And we never had that in the Torah world between the two world periods. We didn't have that sort of thing. But today it'll stop. We've spent a lot of time on this. Here's Jenna. We've got three questions here.
I just comment that in this day and age, most people, perhaps even at this table, I don't know, have relatives who are very much against Torah and don't hesitate to let some of us know that how they feel. And they're our relatives, so we cannot, they're not our friends, they're with us, we can't.
I've got a cousin who isn't true, but he's very clever and very nice, very honest. He's 3 years older than I am. Whenever I go to South Africa, I make a point of going to see him. It's a journey of 800 miles, but I go to see him. He's a very nice person. We've got a lot to discuss about, but we don't discuss. So he's not his field, but he's a very fine person. I've got a friend that we were brought up together, and eventually when I went to yeshiva, he went to Cambridge. He came out of Cambridge, didn't believe anymore. I went out to Shiva, we remained the greatest of friends, always. Never. He was a person with a wonderful character. He's a much nicer person than I am, a much better person than I am. He's got a wonderful character. We remained bosom friends all these years, till today. We speak to each other close if you like, but we always think of one another. Now, the latest is, he goes to shul. You see, now he's my age. Goes to shul already. But he was always interested. Always used to ask me what is happening. Always interested in it. But, and now, where is what he is, pretty much. He works for this. Joe is very yes. But you see, it's, you get it, of course. So one can be quite close with people who are not religious. In the final analysis, it is the character of the person. That is always the basis of everything. The character of the person. You've got that in that whole story with Avraham wanting to get a wife for his son Yitzchak. Imagine what it meant, and the criterion was what is the character of the woman. That was the only thing. Her parents were idolaters. She must have been an idolatress, and he had somebody on his doorstep who wasn't an idolater, and his daughter wasn't an idolater. Character wasn't right. In the final analysis, it is the character. The thing is, one is not allowed to teach Torah to anybody whose character is not in order. It's forbidden to teach Torah to that person. That person will take Torah and will twist it and distort it and make a mess of people through the Torah. He will use it to destroy. Not allowed to teach Torah to a person like that. Says the Rambam, so must he be abandoned? He said no. you first of all got to teach him Derecherim. When you've taught him Derecherim, afterwards, and you're satisfied that now he's got it, then you can teach him Derecherim. So now, maybe you can sit back and purr. I'm teaching you Derecherim. Right. Right. Have you got the idea now?
Yes. Granted that one is not allowed to speak badly of someone, still, if you know that someone, for instance, often makes promises but doesn't carry through on them, and you find that somebody that isn't acquainted with this person is counting on a
in which one is not only deliberate to speak ill of a person, but who one is obliged to do so. Who is the governor? If a man wants to go into partnership with a man, and I know that that man has room 1, 2, 3 people that I know of, going into partnership, and he's got the same method all along. I'll do the work, and I've got the brain for it, put it in the money, and in the end he lands up with the money. And there are three cases. The third case comes along, I'm in duty bound to warn that person. Because all I'm permitted to tell him is, this way you've got to be careful of him, you have three partners, this is what he did, just be careful of him. But he also beats his wife, which isn't very nice at all. That I must be careful.
Yeah.
Not in the subject. A person will suggest a shidduch for another person just to get a girl look, or to get a boy to get him to get married, so without any thought, are they compatible, are they suitable, and there's something dreadfully wrong with the one party. That is too quiet. Now, a very interesting case in the case of a shidduch, and I knew where, I didn't know the family of the girl, but I wanted to make an inquiry. So I told the woman who was the sister of this man, and I told her to New York, and I spoke to her about her brother. She gave me the understanding to leave him alone. She was absolutely right, you see. Anyway, I knew I got guidance from that woman. 2 hours later, she phoned me again. She said, my husband has come home, and I told him about the conversation, and he said to me that I did a very great injustice to my brother, and I should tell you that he is a fine man, he's a gentleman, he's a very nice man, he's a London, he knows a lot of favour. Now, what do you think I did then? I took another opinion, and I got the whole opinion from him. That he has a wife, that he's got a mistress also, and he lived with his mistress. Quite a different story. You understand this, girl?
Yes.
That's a terrible thing. She did the right thing. When I asked her about, she did the right thing. She told me just enough that I must know, I must leave it alone. The husband did the wrong thing.
Yes.
That is wrong. So of course you get that sort of thing going on. But then I'm obliged to tell the truth. That the Chofetz Chaim makes that reservation. But only what is relative to the matter I'm dealing with. I'm not allowed to go into all the other parts that he's got. That is what you know.
In both cases, it appears to me that you're teaching a somebody that is willfully or intentionally harming someone else, and I'm not going to tell more about this.
That's the same thing.
Then
you have got to assist. How far, to what extent is this person relying on this person?
Uh-huh.
You've got to assess that. Uh-huh. I mean, if he's relying on the person that he's going to visit him tomorrow afternoon at 5 o'clock, it's not easy to tell him he wakes up.
Right.
It doesn't matter, you see.
Right.
But if he is reliant for the very important thing, that he's in difficulties with the CIA, as you call them, IRS. He's in difficulties with the IRS, and that when this man said he's taking opium out and all that, he might have to tell him, please, just don't rely on me. And taking our chief Jehovah, the Ben Adam Shahim of Yeshua, taking, don't put your trust in princes, don't put your trust in men, the salvation is not with them, and as the words are made in your womb, and if we understand that that should be enough. You follow?
Yes,
so that you do, but you don't tell more than you have to tell. Work together.
Going along the lines of warning people about other people, I just had a very shocking incident the other day where I met a woman who looked Jewish, sounded Jewish, talked like she was Jewish, and she was Jewish. And I was just, it was a business interaction, and she told me that she saw I was filling out a form for each time, and she said something like, oh, I learned that word in Hebrew school. So I said, oh, but you're Jewish. And she said, yes, I am. And over the course of the conversation, she revealed that she was married to a non-Jew, but she hoped the children would be raised Jewish. Over the further course of the conversation, I left her and spoke to another Mrs. Christie, and then I came back to her and said goodbye to her. She said, I wish she would accept my children and me into a school. And I said, well, of course, but why? And she said, because I'm a Messianic Jew. And I said, you're not a Messianic Jew. She said, I believe that the Messiah has come, and the Christian people don't accept us. But we believe strongly that Yashka is there. She didn't say Yashka, she said it. We didn't say that. But parents are there. But the Messiah and the Kohen is already here, and we were very happy, and we kind of spread the word and whatever. And I was so shocked and upset that I didn't know what to say, and I felt like yelling at everybody here not to go to the conference because she's out there trying to get to
you.
I'm sorry for you. And she said, but why? I'm sorry for you. And I said, because you're the throne.
That's right. It's no good speaking to them. You've got the right, you've got the right to give them people, that certainly.
But she ended up pushing her with Mussolini.
That you can do.
Is it permissible to tell another parent who is expecting to interact their children with his child of the nature of his other child? Or do you allow them to intermix and then find out for themselves? This would be very bad.
No, you can't say it to that.
Yeah, it's not rushing hard at
all. No, didn't
you? You're aware that the child is
in the same way. The child is no Christian about this.
So it's not rushing hard.
No, that is. That when it is a question of saving a person, the only stipulation that the Chofetz Chaim makes is don't overstep the mark.
It doesn't say seizing the possibility to change, because each time she meets someone, if they already have categorized them, I've seen it in my own experience. Not even using, you know, someone has told me in advance, this person is
And I don't even talk to that person. I don't know the person. I don't even know the person.
Making a judgment is taking everything into consideration. Now, what you say is you've got to give the other person a chance. There may be one thing, more than one person, maybe half a dozen people. And I've got to give them a chance. Now, there's another chance also. Not that they will become like me, but I will become like them. And the very real chance, got to be very careful of that. Now, you've got to be able to assess. Of course, a person, take a person into your circle, if you see the character is good, that is your criterion always. First of all, character. After character, I mean, what comes next? Intelligence. What's an intelligent person? To deal with an unintelligent person is very hard. So, character, intelligence. The third thing is not a dropout. You know what a dropout is?
Doesn't
fall through. Well, it's worse than that. You know, people tried everything already. They've never made a success of anything. Once somebody has made a success of something, so you can usually judge how that person is anything to either the critic, that you can say that there's substance there, some kind of substance.
But the problem I have is that if everyone has already met, when they write for you, if some of us told me or thought that a child is difficult to control, I unfortunately know myself, and as much as I try to run interference on knowing that, I'm sure the moment that child did one thing out of line, I would come down on them. Whereas, this is myself, and maybe she's calling me, and I'm going to whereas, if no one has told me that this child was a problem, and they did one thing wrong, I thought I'd just correct them. Not come down on them, but start off if that wasn't a nice thing to do. And I'm just saying that if I act that way, I'm certainly not
But highly intelligent. They've got character, they've got such character, they've got achievement. Very bad people. And this husband and wife were telling us once, they were traveling on board ship in the days when there's a period of traveling on board ship. And there was one child that had been obnoxious. And of course, people didn't want anything to do with it. So this husband and wife, it was a bad one, they got to get nice and listen. What is wrong with him? And they watched him and said, he came to a conclusion that he went to the kitchen. And got his early attention. And they knew he had to give attention. Well, in a few days, started with a different child. That's right. But the older person said, they worked it out. You do that things, of course you can be very careful about yourself. You can be very careful. You can have to condemn a person and then you can say, finish, you finish. You lie like you. That you've got to be very, very careful of. Well, give a person a chance. But also you've got to be careful of. You don't just give everybody the benefit of the doubt. The benefit of the doubt is only when you've done nothing that you should suspect is not in order. And you've done something which can be interpreted as good or bad. Only then you give him the benefit of the doubt. But if he does something which is wrong, don't give him the benefit of that. You don't have to give him the benefit of the doubt. Then don't. If there's something you've done something that is a misdemeanor, better to give him the benefit of the doubt. Because he's very careful about that. Rambam speaks about that. And in today's world, you've got to be doubly careful. You just don't know the feeling of being. So of course you've got to be careful. Can't just give everybody the benefit of the doubt.
To give all kinds of benefits
about
more often than not.
This is something that we have to be careful of. Good. I've been caught 3 times with Orthodox people 3 times. One time I got it to a state, it could have done a lot of damage. I didn't know that. Second time, a little damage. Third time, a tremendous amount of damage. And that's it. 3 times I've been caught. I made a bad judgment. And what was my judgment based on? They said, who? I mean, I was an apocalypse compared to them. So true. I misjudged them. Bad character. So I've learned, after 3 times, to learn a very good lesson. That's got something to do with the Philippine question, said that. But after 3 times, you get a very good idea. All 3 questions, you get 3 answers, you get a good idea of the subject. All right. Now, what has happened to David this year? I don't know. I've never said you don't know questions. I said I expect your questions. I judge you by your questions.
Yes,
there may be good work, on the contrary. Well, it was to be a very important show this evening. We'll have to have it next week. We'll have to have it next week.
That's important, yes.
The fact that a lot of us are confronted with suffering every day, this show is a very, very important.
You know, you say you're confronted with suffering, everybody's confronted with suffering every day. It's just
that we don't have an armor.
This is the idea of the Shiva that you're in is all for this purpose. Of course, you're living in it. I am living a very sheltered life at the moment. And when I was in South Africa, I didn't even live a sheltered life at all. I had to deal with it with a beast, with the secular life round about me every day. That was a great compensation. When I had to deal with the government, I had to deal with the government that was a religious government. But these people were religious people, the government. But they were religious people. And their attachment to me was only on the basis of religion. The only attachment. And before I left, the congregation that I served wanted to come to the arrangement with the government that my successor would have the same access to them, they said, certainly not. It's just a question of religion, you see, so but I was exposed to it, you know, it goes on there. I was exposed to that all days. Yeah, unfortunately, I'm in a position where I'm not exposed to it, and I'm not looking for it. Yeah, you know, to come my way, to come my way. Come my way in that way, you see. So that I can handle it. I can handle it. That is this type of work.
Well,
the Basilus you're showing is a very good idea, but the Basilus you're showing is very misleading. You can go through it and you think you understand it. It's very misleading. He calls it such a simple book in the introduction. For him it's simple. If the beginning of Gaul did the first 11 chapters, said, there isn't one unnecessary word in the whole of those 11 chapters. He might have said, not one unnecessary letter. I don't remember. But that is here to say that not one unnecessary word in those 11 chapters. I want to tell you, the first time my wife sat over the Jewish sharing, she wasn't too impressed with it. Isn't that so? Second time, no. So that still there. Fifth time began to get an idea of it. Fifth time began to understand what it was really about. the sixth child became engrossed with it. Since then, if she's gone the bit of time, she loves it. It's got him. And if you can know this, you can even look at it and show it a little bit. He's a person to me. It's a little duplicate. It's and so in the production. A value is only engaged over and over again. That is the value. If you like this, that is the value. But in English, there's some good books of Christian, the three orthodox Christians. Yes, he's very good. He calls it on the film. There's some others that say the most atrocious things. And they don't call it missing, it's not missing, it's nonsense. And I say, atrocious things, but that's not missing. But unfortunately, you see, you can't have missing without a law. It's impossible. And people, you see, it's like a mysticism, it's a Kabbalah. It's easy. You can say anything. And the Kabbalah without a law is, not Kabbalah, it's mysticism. A drush without a local is mythology.
Did
you know what a drush is? Drush is homiletic. Drush is homiletic. That's a good question. That's a good question. I'll tell you what it is. It is the taking of circumstances in the paradigm.
Drush
is homiletic. And equating it with modern life. You hear me dealing with you in a church on Shabbos morning. You follow? Could you give me a church name? I'll give you an example of it. Bullock. Bullock invites Bilam to come to curse the Jewish people. And he says, no, I'm not going to go. I can only go with God to your Jewish people. So Bullock says, you know, it's not just a question of having your experiences. There's a lot more than that too. He says, no, I don't tell you if God tells me to go. But God tells him not to go. He's not satisfied. He wants to twist God's arm. He doesn't do it. Now, it's possible that I can take that and unite it to things that are going on. Only exactly the same. We know it is wrong. And says in the table that it's wrong. But we want to do. So we twist further. How do we twist further? Well, the circumstances are different here. Yeah. We're living in a different world. It's so difficult. You can't be expected. You can't be different from everybody else. You follow it? That is truth. It's simple truth. I'm telling you there's good truth and there's bad truth. And the truth that it's so bad that it's pathology. That the truth is absolutely wrong to make such a mess of it that it's good. Got no idea. You want the example of bad truth. But I heard a rabbi once giving it. Here's in the telegram that said in the Gemara that Rabbi Yosef said, I am a poet. But that answer he said, I'm not a poet. But if my colleagues told me that I must go up and do him, that he bless the people, which only a poem may do, then I would listen to them and I'd do it. So he gives a whole sermon on Vox Populi Vox Dei. You know what that is? The voice of the people is the voice of God. What the people want, that is, the person who is an excellent exponent of that, is to be Kennedy. What the people want, that is the way. See, that's liberalism. What the people want, that is the way. Do what the people want. So this is the sermon. Do what the people want. That is teaching afterwards. Fortunately, he was a rabbi that listened. Very few rabbis listen. They want to be listening to, but they don't listen. I think you know what that means. This is taken from the Torah. It says in the Torah, if you know that this is your left hand and this is your right hand, and the Chazal tells you just the opposite, then you must know that you are on the other. And what it tells me is that he has got so much confidence in his love, these colleagues, as a result of people from the mission of the Gemara, he's got so much confidence in him that he's very silly that he's a certain Yukha, and they know that he's a colleague which he does his life, that they know more than he does about it. That is the meaning of it. But Vox Populi, Vox Dei, you've got exactly the opposite in the Torah. It's exactly the opposite. That's bad Jewish. That's distorted Jewish. All right. In each one of these areas, there is the misuse and the abuse of it, of which we've got to be very careful. And the driving principle is always, what is the terrorism? The halacha, even the to start with Musaf and not to know halacha is dangerous. Say the wrong things. And you can say anything, you see, today. You can say anything. Don't listen to your parents. Why should you listen to your parents? If you ask them to bring you into the world? All that sort of thing. You can say anything to them, and it's all great, except you. Be very careful of that. All right.